Violet Brown driving.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The game on lock for sure.
Corner three is no good. Rebound Tobias Harris. And not only are the Celtics going to lose for the first time this year when leading by more than 10, they're going to lose by more than 10. And the Sixers, without Joel Embiid, clinch the season series with the Celtics, whose difficult week continues. A 15-point lead turns into an 11-point loss. And some questions now to be answered. The final, Philadelphia 109, Boston 98.
The league is hard. You can feel pretty good about yourself, and 1 week later, you know, not so hot, right? I mean, that's, you know, these guys just went through it over here last week. But inevitably, there's another game. And if we play like we did tonight, clean some things up and play with a little bit more pop, then I like what we're becoming.
Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 Sports Hub. Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, and you. If you want to join us at 617-779-0985. Also at Brian Robb, covers the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal, alongside as well, producing the show. So I'm not freaking out, per se, after the Celtics lost their third straight fall to the 76ers, 109-98 on Thursday night, Chris. But perturbed? A little bit peeved? And I wasn't even that... I didn't even feel those things after they lose the game to the Wizards, which just felt like one of these... you know, mid to late season NBA, like half-assed type things. Like, yeah, we got to be on the road. It's a terrible team. Who cares about this one? Then I got a little bit more mad when they lose at home to the Spurs, who aren't the Spurs of old, in a game that it felt like from the jump that they just weren't interested in. And they got back into it, you know, before that idiot threw the cup or the hard seltzer.
The Truly.
Yeah, the Truly hard seltzer.
Yeah.
Bad advertisement for them. And that felt like they just didn't even want to be there that night. And that one, then I got a little bit more pissed. And then they go into the 76ers, Philadelphia 76ers, without Joel Embiid. They have a double-digit lead, and they blow that game.
Yeah,
they get killed in
lead.
The paint. So not freaking out. You know, teams are going to have lulls. It's a long season, 82 games. And, hell, I even declared last week on this show, in the abbreviated one that we did, even after they struggled with a bad Hawks team, I said that they're the third-best team in the NBA. All right, maybe that was a little bit hyperbolic, but I'm not going to freak out too much. But they're not in a good way right now, this team.
No, I mean, look, they've hit a bump in the road. I don't think there's any question about that. And you look at these last three games, and they haven't performed well. I mean, they trailed the whole time against the Wizards and the Spurs. And you look at 76ers team, again, without Embiid, and I think you saw how much they missed Al. I mean, I thought, look, you can look at the numbers that Al put up, and maybe they don't look amazing for that game, but I thought he completely controlled that game. I mean, he was a plus 19, which was the highest of anybody who played in the game. But beyond the 17 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists, I thought he played the Celtics like a puppet and really sort of exposed some of their issues defensively. And one of the things you felt good about with the Celtics as one of these teams in the East was, well, okay, you know, they own Philadelphia. Like, they have that mental advantage over Philadelphia, even though I think we would all agree on paper, Philadelphia probably is a more talented team when fully healthy. But now Philly's 3-0 against you this year. So when I look at the Celtics right now, I feel like they're part of the pack below Milwaukee. Like, they're much closer to that pack, and they're in that pack with Miami, Philadelphia, Toronto, than they are to Milwaukee.
Yeah, and shame on me. I think I ended up putting too much into that ass-kicking they put on Toronto on Christmas Day, which is, you know, to me, when the league year really starts. And I know that they were without Pascal Siakam that game, but, like, you know, in a place that they never win, I thought that it was their marquee win of the year. Great night for Jaylen Brown. It's like, okay, this team is actually going to make some noise in the postseason. They've come back down to earth, and I think you're right. They're more... not a middler, but...
No, they're not a middler, but there's a pack. There's Milwaukee, yeah. And then there's a pack of teams that I think are very good teams, but they're all sort of together. And I think the Celtics are part of that pack. And there was a time where I thought they were above that pack.
Yeah, so Brown in a bit of a slump right now. And, well, I guess you could say that just looking at that loss to the 76ers, that you could say that about the Wings. It's Brown, it's Jason Tatum, it's Gordon Hayward, who had a bad night, is what was... happening last year with that log jam at wing. Is that starting to rear its head here?
Yeah, I mean, Jaylen Brown's 14 for his last 48. I mean, that's not good. And I know, you know, Chris Forsberg had a story that he put up on NBC Sports Boston, sort of breaking down a lot of the numbers. And I know, B-Rob, you wrote a story. I think this was you and your story. You said that their usual starting five together, they're just 6-5 together. Yeah, I mean, just 6-5 with their usual starting five. So that includes the three wings in there. And that's always been my biggest question. I raised this in the beginning of the year. What's it like when all those guys are healthy and can they function together? And we haven't seen it. I also think that's a question about Brad. Can he manage the egos of three all-star caliber players who basically play, if not the same position, very, very similar positions and get the most out of those guys? I still think, I said this at the time when we were doing the show, Jim, for the Celtics to reach their potential, one of those guys has to go to the bench. It's not going to be Tatum, so it's Hayward versus Brown. I think one of those guys has to go to the bench. That doesn't mean that they don't finish the games on the floor together, but I think the Celtics' biggest weakness right now, even above rim protection and the bigs, because they've gotten a lot out of Tice and Cantor, it's still bench scoring. They do not have consistent bench scoring. And I know Smart, you know, played really well the other night, but they need more off the bench. And I think if you put Hayward or Brown off the bench, you get more scoring off the bench, and it frees up one of those guys to play more minutes where they're the primary offensive option and they're not worrying about stepping on toes.
B-Rob, what do you think the fix is here? Is it, I always just say, like, if you're going to put one of these guys on the bench, even though he's overall had a really good year, it'd be Brown because he got his money.
Yeah, I mean, and he's, I think the worry with him is that he, I think mentally he likes to start. And he, you know, even last year, like a couple years ago, Marcus Smart even volunteered to come off the bench to start the season because it's a confidence thing for him. So I think Brad's trying to manage that. And Gordon, I do think there's some ego there with him and Brad right now. Like, he's in, this is a contract year for him, so that's not going to really help him, you know, sending him back to the bench given how far those guys go back. So to be honest, if they're not willing to make that switch, I think the answer here is you make a trade. You have to add some bench scoring because, to Chris's point, not only is the bench scoring terrible, they're shooting 28% from 3-point range off the bench collectively. Like, ooh, that's like 29th in the league. That you're not going to get away with that and be able to beat good teams. And that's, you know, as you know, guys go through slumps now, I think we're seeing more of that.
So you don't think the focus is, because you keep hearing like they need a big, they need rim protection, someone's going to make a trade for another center. It's not that. It's get help on the bench.
Exactly. That's priority number one if I'm Danny Ainge, because you know, Brad Wanamaker's been great this year, but he's fallen back to earth.
Yeah.
And then, you know, your best 3-point shooter off the bench right now is Semi Ojeleye, who, you know, Semi's been great, but that's not
hot
a good sign.
Cold.
Right. It's just very streaky, very one dimensional. So, you know, there's guys available on the market. You have assets to make a deal. You know, this team needs some firepower.
Steve in Medford, you're first up here on the Sports Hub Celtics show this afternoon. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Jim. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Chris, you doing good, man. I feel like whenever I call, I never ask how you're doing. You doing good, too?
I'm doing good. Thank you for asking. That's very kind.
All right, very good.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, very good. Okay, so, yeah, so in terms of this three-game losing streak, I'm going to try to go all green team here, and I'm not too panicked. Don't get me wrong. Like, that Philly loss is the one that raised my eyebrow because, you know, you're playing against Philly. Their best player is out, and you can't take advantage of that. And the worst part is that they lose the season series now because, like, Chris, what you were saying, you have these five teams that are kind of close to each other. Now the Celtics lose that tiebreaker if it comes down to the standings. I'm kind of with you guys. I think the major thing we need is bench scoring, and I want to run a name by Brian. I brought this up last week, you guys. Does David Bertans make a lot of sense, the guy from Washington? I don't feel you'd have to give up a lot to get him. He's on an expiring contract. He's a sniper from three, and I feel like if you replace his minutes with Semi Ojeleye's, I think they can make a world of a difference for the Celtics.
Yeah, he'd be a perfect fit. The problem is he's almost playing too well to the point where the price just might be too high since he's 27. Washington doesn't have a lot of good young chips, so they might be asking for the sun and the moon, and you know, you're not going to give up more than a late first-round pick for him. But yeah, I mean, as far as a fit goes, guys, I feel like, you know, a stretch, you know, four that can shoot a three, that's what you need off the bench right now.
Do you have any other names that come to mind?
You know, you can go a lot of different directions. The Knicks, who are terrible, just have a lot of random 3-point shooters on that team, like Reggie Bullock or Wayne Ellington. You know, not really sexy names, but just guys who can shoot. Former Celtic Etuan Moore is down in New Orleans. I think that's, again, a guy you wouldn't have to give up much for to get. And then, I mean, you can go after some bigger names if you're willing to put that Memphis pick on the table, which is, I mean, Chris, you're all over this, I know, about saying that the future of that pick wasn't looking good. They're in the playoffs right now, guys.
Yeah.
So that pick is not going to be high, and so you might want to sell on that pick before it gets even worse.
Yeah,
they're this year's Sacramento Kings.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is a neat little story. Like, oh, no, John Morant can actually play, and this team's actually pretty good.
Oh, yeah. And I called this last year at the lottery, and, like, angry Celtics fans were like, you don't know what you're talking about. Why are you exaggerating this? It would have been much worse if the Knicks had gotten – no, that was a worst-case scenario last year. Nothing happened with the Sacramento pick in the lottery. The Lakers moved up to four and now had enough ammunition to complete the AD deal. Look at them, even though I know AD's hurt. It didn't play last night. And then Memphis moving up to two and getting John Morant. And you see what's happened there with Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson, and Dylan Brooks. Yeah, they have the eighth spot right now in the West in the playoffs. Even if they don't make the playoffs, that pick is, I'm not going to say worthless, but it's going to be a late lottery pick in what is a weak, weak draft.
All right, so how do you feel about this team right now, this three-game losing streak, as they're back in action at home against the Zion-less Pelicans tonight? Just a bump in the road of a long season, or... is this indicative of something worse for the Celtics? 617-779-0985. We'll talk to you, and we'll talk to Chris Forsberg, who covers the Celtics of NBC Sports Boston, next here in the Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Chris Casper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show, on 98.5 the Sports Hub.
I was curious. You said it's a toe foot injury with Hayward. It's the same leg, you know, and my brain goes back to 2017 with that injury. It's the same leg. I know this is foot, not ankle, not fibula, but is it in any way, shape, or form related to past injuries, i.e. what happened in 2017?
I don't think so. I don't believe so at all, no. It's just right in the bottom of your foot. I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with it.
I think it has everything to do with the prior injury. I mean, I didn't get hurt on my right foot. When you have a traumatic event like that to your foot and your ankle, like, things are going to change inside of there that you don't know necessarily, because they might not bug you, but I think they start to poke their head a little bit if it gets tweaked in some way or another. I think it does have to do with, I don't think it's a coincidence that it's on my left foot, you know.
I think that's worth playing again. Quite a juxtaposition. That sounds from about a week and a half ago now. President of Basketball Ops Danny Ainge saying, nothing wrong with Gordon Hayward, followed a couple of days later by Gordon Hayward at practice saying, like, oh yeah, no, that's my foot injury, it's got everything to do with the ankle that snapped off a couple of years ago. Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 of Sports Hub, and it's worth playing again as we bring in our guest here this afternoon on the Sports Hub Celtics Show, joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, Chris Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston. So, Chris, you hear that, and do you think there's... Are these two parties on the same page here? And is this maybe Danny Ainge trying to say, nothing's wrong because it's starting to look like there's a, you know, there's a log jam at wing again. He may be looking to shop Gordon Hayward by the trade deadline.
Well, for the first part, I do think they probably should have been better on the same page there at the start. I mean, Gordon was clearly frustrated, and I don't know why there wasn't, like, more communication between, you know, B-ball ops and Gordon about him thinking it was related. Now, clearly he came back. He played pretty well. He's gone into a bit of a funk, and certainly it coincides at the same time here as Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum go into a funk, and so we're all sort of sitting here wondering if the mix is right. But I don't know. Like, I'm not at that point yet. I just think it's a three-game sample. I don't want to overreact to that small of a sample, and yet, you know, I get it. Like, they all kind of play the same position, but when the Celtics have been at their best this season, they've sort of leaned on that depth, that ability to sort of have better perimeter talent than the opponent next to them, and they've shown it's been able to work. Their net rating has still been great. Their play has been, the offense in particular has been excellent when those three are on the court together. Gordon sort of reaffirmed this morning at shoot around to reporters that, you know, he feels fine, he feels healthy. And so, if it bears out over the rest of the month, it's something to kind of keep an eye on, but I'm not at the worry point yet. It just seems like they're all sort of slumping at the same time.
No, Chris, I believe this was your story after the loss to the Sixers. You said that the trio of wings has been solid but not spectacular. 273 minutes on the floor over 16 games, net rating of plus 4.8, but that also includes an underwhelming defensive rating of 108.9. Boston is 9-7 in those games. So do you feel differently than when you wrote that story, or how would you characterize those numbers versus what you just said?
Well, I would say that 4.6 is, like, you know, like I said, it's good, but it's not spectacular. I think the offense has been really, really good. I think there's this thing where when your offense is cranking, you know, and we see this when Kemba's on the court, right? It's like, it doesn't look like their defense is bad, but it's just you're outscoring teams so much that you don't maybe notice some of the defensive erosion. The worrisome part to me is certainly the 9-7 in those games, and that's a little bit harder to explain. You know, it's some of its strength of competition that they've been out there for the better games, but you know, I think that's what troubles me is that in the nights that Jason Tatum's gone quiet has been some of those Philly games, that Jaylen Brown, for as spectacular as he's been, can have a 2-for-12 night down there in Philly. And so I think it's fair to wonder, you know, like just necessarily if it'll work overall. I guess the counter argument is that even the starting group in particular has put up excellent numbers. Again, in a smaller sample, 100 something 20 minutes or whatever. But so I'm not ready to just kind of like completely be worried about it. But I do think it's fair to sit here and go, okay, is this the best construct of the team moving forward? I think that's a fair conversation to have when you have players with such overlap. I just need to see it for a longer sample. The other thing is, you know, because they just haven't been healthy all at the same time, you know, only 16 of the whatever 35 games have been, I will buy that there's some continuity there that you have to develop and, you know, sort of feel the roles out and stuff like that. But when I look at the numbers, too, the splits, like when Gordon's on the court, Howard, Tatum, and Brown playing, their efficiency goes up. It's just sometimes the arc of the team and how they're performing hasn't been spectacular.
So would you advocate for or think that at any point, if this continues, that Brad should consider one of these guys coming off the bench? Obviously, that doesn't mean they can't all finish the game together, but just changing up the look a little.
Yeah, I think the point I'm at now is I'd like to see the starting group. I know the slow starts have been maddening, but this group in particular, when they've had those three wings with Tice and Kemba, has played well. So I'm not ready to sort of make an overhaul there. They certainly need to play with more intensity and more aggression. And they really did that the other night down in Philly. That was what was surprising was that it sort of went the other way and they took their foot off the gas from there. I think it's more the reserve lineups. I think Brad's sort of really hunting for the best groups, the best. He's said in the past that he wants to keep three of his best five on the court at all times. But, you know, I think he's still trying to figure out which three and, you know, who complements each other and how do you prevent sort of a let up when you do start strong. And so those are the groups that I think they got to tinker with right now and, you know, sort of allow the opening and closing lineups to get a larger sample here before they determine if that's something that's more of a concern. I will say the one, you know, the biggest negative maybe for me, besides just the wing struggling in there in Philly, was that they went with their best five lineup there at the end, and it really didn't look great. And so I do think there's questions about how much you can play that lineup, especially against a team like Philly. And yet again, I yearn to see more of it to figure out, okay, can you go with a lineup where no one is bigger than, you know, Tatum is your center or Marcus Smart is your center, but Tatum is the tallest guy on the floor. I just need to see it more before I'm ready to sort of determine whether there's bigger overhauls need to happen.
Talking to Chris Forsberg, covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston here on Casper and Murray. So, Chris, the consensus, I think, among fans and throughout the league is the Celtics need a big man if they're going to make any kind of a deep run this postseason. We were talking in the prior segment about this, and B-Rub, who you know covers Celtics for Boston Sports Journal, believes it's more about trying to find a bench scorer. Where are you?
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with B-Rub. No surprise that he's right on target with that. I just think, and here, like in a vacuum, what is the Celtics' biggest need? It would obviously be trying to get a big man that you could add some size and some beef and compete with, you know, Embiid and Giannis and really try to clog the area around the basket more than what you've got. And yet, I don't see a path where they can do that without sacrificing one of their top five guys. And so the upgrade wouldn't be worthwhile enough in my mind to go that avenue. I think what's more readily available is bench scoring, shooting. You've got the potential to really go out there and look for somebody who can give you that burst, who can give you three-point shooting. It still might be costly to go out there and get that, but I'd be fascinated to see how they do it.
Do you have any names that sort of come to mind for bench scoring? I guess that's my first question. It's a windy day, I know.
Sorry, guys.
No problem, Forsby. That's my first question. And then I just want to follow that up sort of with the second question, which would be, where are the Celtics on Hayward? Is this sort of a long-term commitment in their mind? I know he has the opt-out. Or is he somebody that they would put on the trade table if it was something that could get them a significant upgrade?
Yeah, so I totally get the idea with Hayward, right? Like, he's got the ability to opt out here, and there's some concern, like, would he just walk away after the season? Do you have to sort of protect yourself from that possibility? You know, I think there's been a lot of good faith on both sides, so I'm not necessarily worried about that. I think the Celtics have sort of stuck with him, and I think he likes it here. I mean, there is a question about, is it someone you're committed to long-term? Again, that's sort of the issue you got to answer here with the wings. Can you play these three wings? Is that a sustainable core deep into the future? And so, that's the biggest question. Like, Danny's got to get to a point where, you know, if he's worried about that, if he doesn't think that's a potential, then I think you have to think harder about making a move. And as difficult as that would be, as optically as bad as that would look, those are the tough decisions that basketball teams have to make. I don't think they're there yet, and that's why I don't put too much stock into it, because also I don't see a player out there where the move they make, they get better somehow. Like, everyone wants to throw out Drummond and Steven Adams. Like, to me, those aren't upgrades. Those aren't the sort of players that you make those moves in order to go get and trade a Gordon Hayward, because you sort of sit there and hope that he can get to the point where he gets back to the player we've seen. You know, as for bench scoring, you know, what's out there, it's also hard because, again, the Celtics just don't have a lot of assets to go make these sort of moves. You know, you don't want to move anyone with your bigger salaries, like Marcus Smart, even at $15 million. You know, so you're left with some of these bench guys. Like, how much value do they have? Do you move a pick just to sort of get an upgrade? I think that's going to be the hardest part. And do you mess with the chemistry, which has been really good this year? And so, you know, do you package, you know, Vincent and Semi and try to get something? I don't know. It's a tougher decision. It's got to be something someone you're confident is going to come in, won't disrupt, and can give you a boost over what you've currently got.
Before we let you go, so it's Celtics-Pelicans tonight. You'll probably get to see Zion Williamson during the warm-ups. But he won't be on the floor as he's continuing to come back from that torn meniscus in his right knee. Does this feel like Greg Oden, all over again with this kid?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're certainly treading cautiously, and I'll be fascinated to know. Obviously, he plays with such explosion, and if he has issues, it's certainly something to wonder and watch. But I guess I'm just really hopeful that, you know, he was just the small glimpses we've gotten have been so much fun. I know, like, the league is so bummed because they put him on so many national TV games and then they have him get injured and not be out there. It has been a bummer. You know, selfishly, I look ahead. The Celtics play the Pep down there against the Pelicans later this month. I hope we get to see him down there. But, yeah, certainly, like, you know, it's never good when you can't even get out there on your rookie deal. I'll be fascinated to see how they tread with him. Do they shut him down if he has any discomfort once he gets back out there? I guess the hope is that New Orleans is sort of building towards something and there's been no reason to really rush him out there. Let's cross our fingers for Zion.
All right, Chris Forsberg covers the Celtics, NBC Sports, Boston, some of the best hair in the business as well. Chris, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for putting up with the wind.
And no problem,
Chris Forsberg comes to us via the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. I don't know, do you feel weird about the Zion thing? I just feel like that is, I don't know, ever since...
Yeah.
You know, you had the shoe explode last year, and then in the preseason, like when you had that thing where you felt the thing in the knee, and all of a sudden it's like, oh no, he's going to be out indefinitely. It's like, oh boy, I've seen this guy. I've seen this story before.
I mean, I wouldn't put him in the Greg Oden category, and I feel like we also forget, like, remember, you know, Joel Embiid had some real injury problems his first couple of years in the league, and he was coming off the broken foot. You know, he has turned himself into one of the best players in the league. Now, there are still some durability concerns about Embiid, but he's really established himself as a star. So it's not the death knell if you can't function as a rookie. Blake Griffin tore his ACL, missed his entire rookie year, then came back and won Rookie of the Year. So there are guys that have been highly selected who've missed time and come back. It's not automatically a Greg Oden situation.
All right, you want to join the show? 617-779-0985. Your thoughts on the Celtics in this three-game losing streak? Are you concerned? Huh? And do you feel they have to make a trade? Danny Ainge certainly doesn't feel that way. We'll get to a story that he had with Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe coming up next. And again, you want to join the show, 617-779-0985. Sports Hub Celtics Show with Jim Murray and Chris Gasper here on 98.5 Sports Hub.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show. The excitement is building for another banner.
Round for three, got it.
The Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Can't win them all, obviously, but, you know, we just got to be better, you know, and we're gonna continue to improve and continue to learn and, you know, grow with each other. And, you know, we just have to move on to the next one.
It's a part of the kinks in the season. We haven't been fully healthy, really, in a while. So as we, you know, come back together and we set our feet, we just got to continue to be aggressive, you know. Things might not go our way. Shots might not go in, but just keep working. Like, we get back into the gym tomorrow, get ready for New Orleans.
And again, it's Celtics and New Orleans Pelicans tonight. at the Garden. Tip off a little after 7 o'clock. Sean Graney and Cedric Maxwell will have a call over on our sister station, 105.7 WROR. That was Kemba Walker and Jaylen Brown after the Celtics' third straight loss. They fall to the 76ers, 109-98 on Thursday night. So I want to gauge how you, the Celtics fan, are feeling. Are you a little bit freaked out right now because this team has lost three straight, or is this just, you know, a bump in the road of a long 82-game season? Peter in Jamaica Plain, you're next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show. Hello.
Hey, guys, we do this with every sport. They, you know, they win 8 out of 9. They're going to win the championship. They lose 3. You know, we're going to the sky is falling. I mean, we do this. This is just what Boston fans do. But I just want to address a couple points. One, the bench. Who mentioned the bench scoring? Was it
B-Rob and Chris, yeah.
Okay. It's kind of skewed because Wanamaker has always been good for the last 2 years off the bench. Cantor can score, okay. I think the numbers are skewed because the 0 for 25 star for Grant Williams, since then, I think he's been hitting about 37%. Ogilvy shooting 36%. And they have the best score in Carson Edwards, basically, in the whole NBA draft. So I think the scoring is in Romeo Langford as well. But the thing that bothers me, and I was kind of concerned when they traded for Kemba, is it seems like there may be not enough balls for all the scores they have. I mean, Marcus Smart takes a lot of shots. And then you've got, you know, the big four. And I think Jason Tatum's kind of a little bit like an egomaniac, kind of. He doesn't mention team like, you know, Jaylen Brown and the other guys do. I think he wants to be a... Yeah, I think he's reading his press clippings a little bit too much.
Yeah, and Peter, on that, I'm sorry. I'm going to let you go on there. I gave you about a minute and a half. On Tatum, it's just his inconsistency drives me crazy, Chris. Like, there's times more than anything else I just wish he would, you know, go to the basket. He still kind of relies a little bit too much on that fadeaway jumper thing, and there's still a Kobe-ification to his game. But overall, like, it's an attitude thing, too. Like, yeah. Jason Tatum continues to drive me crazy.
I think his defense has gotten better, though, and yeah. I feel like his passing has. There is still inconsistency. I mean, that's the last thing to come, I think, for any young player when you're becoming a star or all-star, superstar, is that consistency. And there are still nights like, you know, last Friday against Atlanta, the 2 for 16, and obviously he was 4 for 13 against the 76ers. And there are times when, as a superstar, like, you just have to be on, you know, and the consistency will be one of the last things to come. He's been in a little bit of a shooting slump here. He was 5 for 16, 2 against San Antonio. One thing I do think with Tatum, though, and I like this, I feel like he's doing a better job of contributing and affecting the team positively, even when his shot doesn't fall. And I think that's been a real area of growth from him this year, and I've liked what I've seen from him.
All right, I want to get to this column from your colleague at the Globe, Gary Washburn. Celtics' Danny Ainge says there's no pressure to make a trade. Everyone calm down. He's not distressed about what is a common NBA skid, Gary writes, and noted injuries as a factor. Again, Celtics have lost three straight here, and Danny Ainge said, quote, in the column, I don't think it's time to react. It's been a rough stretch, but I'm not worried about that. Talking about looking at a big man to add to this team. There's a lot of really good players in the NBA, so there's always players you can potentially get, Ainge said, but I don't go into a trade deadline with any more stress or pressure that I have to do something to get better. I don't see it like that. If a deal is there that we like, we do it. If there's no deals that we like, we don't do it. What all stood out to you in this column, Chris?
Yeah, I'll tell you this one. This quote from Danny stood out to me because I think it's relative to last year and not having great chemistry or continuity when Kyrie was here. We like our players. I like all the guys on our team right now. We're excited about them, and each one of them have a bright future. But sometimes you tweak your roster for a better fit, better balance. But at the same time, you can also mess your roster up by making changes too, because these guys get along and play hard together, and they like each other, and they know our system. That was the quote that stood out to me the most. That reads like a quote from Brad, not Danny. Danny's normally not sentimental like this, but I think he realizes last year they were a collection of talent and not a team, and they didn't reach their potential. And I feel like he realizes half the battle with this team is these guys like each other. They have chemistry on the court and off. Do I want to disturb that by making a change here that might not really upgrade our talent all that much?
Yeah, and I'm for that. And I get, even from like a marketability standpoint, after, you know, last year's hideous season and how they got more unlikable by the game, especially from like December on.
Yeah.
That you want to have a good room and you want to have a team that people, you know, actually care for, and you got, you know, teammates that care for each other. You want that likability factor. But I don't know, you also have to be you got to be hard about it, too, and look at it and say, like, okay, like, if I got to move a piece so that it actually have us go on a deeper run and compete for an NBA title, I'm going to do it. Like, I don't think you could look at that room and be like, ah, well, they're all fun and they like each other, so we can't make a move.
But how much of that is catering to Brad, too?
It sounds like a lot.
And also, but also,
and that's annoying.
What gets the most out of Brad? Because it's pretty clear that, and I thought this, and I'm glad Danny took ownership of this earlier this year. I think it was in an interview with Jackie McMullen, but I really thought that, you know, Danny put Brad Stevens in a tough spot last year with that team. There were a lot of guys that were forced to take on lesser roles that thought they should be in larger roles. There was a lot of balance there from an ego standpoint with the roster. There were not clearly defined roles. There was roster, I think, clutter, and it was hard for Brad. And I thought Danny finally took some ownership of that. So he now knows my head coach is one of the best head coaches in the NBA, but he does not function well in this situation. So maybe that's part of it, too, where he doesn't want to create that situation again. And to go back to our discussion about the wings, that is still the biggest question I have about Brad. Can he manage and massage the egos of superstar, all-star caliber players to make the pieces fit and make it all work? So now if you throw another log on that fire, makes it even harder for Brad. And maybe Danny has some of those same questions.
Yeah, but this feels more of a Brad thing, and that's annoying to me. Yeah, because I think the answer to that, Chris, based on last year, is no. Like, if you're a big ego superstar player, then Brad doesn't want to deal with you. He wants a team that's fun to be around. Like, again, it's ultimately, and I get it, after last year, that should be part of the plan for the Celtics this year. But ultimately, the bigger plan and the bigger goal is to win a championship, and at least, at the very least this year, go on a deep playoff run. And it just feels like he's trying to placate the coach more than anything else reading that quote.
Oh, it's interesting. I mean, maybe he is. And maybe that's where it comes into play with Hayward. You know, if they move on from Hayward, I think Brad would not love that based on the personal relationship and based on the trust he has for him from a basketball standpoint. Can I read one more quote for
please,
this before you take this call? Here's another one. He was asked about whether the Celtics can make a long playoff run with their current collection of big men. He told Gary Washburn, well, yes, I do believe it's good enough. But a bigger question is, what are the alternatives? So we like those guys. They are playing well. I'm a fan of each one of them. It's always about what are you giving up to get certain players. That's always the key. Anybody can pick guys on an Xbox game or NBA 2K like you can pick your own team. But that's not how the NBA works. We're not going to give up $19 million of one of our good players to have somebody for 3 months. That ain't going to happen.
So what do you take out of that?
I think it's interesting. I mean, the idea, I think we're all talking about sort of bringing in a big man upgrade. I read that and I say, he's like, yeah, if I can get Karl Anthony Towns, we'll make a deal.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you know, I'm not going to do some incremental upgrade. This is me. I mean, this Memphis pick is dropping in value by the day. I would try and make some sort of deal. And I don't know how you make the salaries match. You know, that's better for B-Rob or whatever. But I would try and get Miles Turner from Indy. Somebody like that, and somebody of that ilk. Miles Turner is not a superstar, but he's a good player and he would be a good upgrade. And I feel like this Memphis pick is worthless would be an overstatement, but I think right now you're better off moving it for a veteran player than executing that pick.
Yeah, I want to read your tweet from 14 hours ago. Oh, remember, man, last year's NBA draft lottery when I said Memphis moving up to number 2 and the Lakers moving up to number 4 was a disaster for the Celtics? Yeah, I was right. L.A. traded for Anthony Davis with that pick. And with Ja Morant, Memphis just beat the Spurs to seize the 8th playoff spot in the West.
There's a few more.
Yeah. What else did you write?
I don't know. Just replying to people about how bad this draft is. And, you know.
Oh, okay, yeah. So far, a lot of time left in the season. True, but even if Memphis doesn't make the playoffs, they should be close like Sacramento was last year. And I'm with you on that. The Memphis pick, which conveys this year, is number 7 and beyond in the draft order, is turning into the Sacramento pick 2.0. That was my point. So this is you like ringing the alarm bell. Like, they should not hold on to this pick.
I wouldn't hold on to it. This draft, I mean, people are really iffy on this draft coming up. I mean, I don't know. B-Rob, what are you hearing in the league on this draft?
Same thing you are. There's no clear-cut guys at the top, and then it's just not a special draft.
And there's some question on some of the, I want to put this, the demeanor of some of these kids. Like, how hard are they going to play? Like James Wiseman, Anthony Edwards. How hard are they going to play on a night-to-night basis? There's a little bit of the Cam Reddish coast factor with some of these kids at the top of the draft.
And the other name, as far as a big that gets thrown around at least a lot this week, was Andre Drummond.
I'm good.
And B-Rub, same?
Pass.
Yeah.
Just hard pass.
Antiquated big for today's NBA more than anything else.
Yeah. I mean, he's a good player. He's a good rim. I don't know. B-Rub, you know better than I do. You know more about basketball. I just don't think he'd fit the system.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, he'd be great for the putbacks and the pick and roll. But defensively, he's you know, you can't guard the Bucks. Like, oh, and stretch bigs. Like, you can't guard the perimeter.
Embiid owns him, too.
Right, and Embiid owns him.
Embiid owns Andre Drummond.
Right. So if Kanter does a better job than Drummond, then why are you paying a guy like $30 million for that? You'd take the guy that's making five.
I think your Hawks should trade for Drummond because they need a little rim protection there. Your Hawks.
Let's stop breaking my balls on that. Joe in Bedford, you're next here in the Sports Hub Celtics show. Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
My thing is, since 2008, that's the last time we won a banner. We've had our ups and downs. We've had some success here and there. My question to you is it time to move on from Ainge and Brad Stevens?
Look, I don't think so. No. I am with Felger in that Danny Ainge doesn't get enough in terms of, like, people being upset at times for, you know, the overall lack of success. There should be another title here. They blew it in 2010, but I don't know. People are too easy on Danny Ainge. Celtics fans are like, no, he's the best. You don't have to worry about him at all.
Go on. I want to hear more.
No, that's all.
That's all you got?
that's all.
I felt like there was a developing hot take there.
No. I think he's right. Like, Danny Ainge doesn't get enough criticism from Celtics fans in this town. It's like, we're happy with the one title.
It's tough, though.
In Ainge, we trust. Everything that he does is the right thing.
I mean, it's hard. And I will say this about Danny. I feel like Danny the NBA is one of those leagues where you can do everything right, and it can still not work for you. Like, you know, we were just talking about, like, the Memphis pick. He has no control over that. The Sacramento pick. The year, you know, he made a great deal to get Tatum and not draft Fultz, which was brilliant. And then they get another pick. And the next year they could have had the Lakers pick. And I think I'm right on this. It conveyed to them if it landed 2 through 5, and it didn't. And if it had landed 2 through 5, they would have been able to draft, like, Luka Doncic. So there's just a lot of things he's done that are the right thing to do. They sign Hayward and trade for Irving. That should have worked. You know, it doesn't. Hayward messes up his leg, and, you know, Kyrie just doesn't fit here at the end of the day for whatever reason. So it's just really tough. And then you look at, you know, Rob Pelinka just got an extension with the Lakers. Like, what did he really do? Like, LeBron James was like, hey, I like LA, and I have a production company called Uninterrupted, and I want to play for you. Great. I mean, what did he do?
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to get to one more thing before we wrap up the Sports Hub Celtic show for this week. Taco Fall, who I know the fans go crazy for, is getting all-star votes. It's time for us to have a real conversation about Taco Fall and you people who are trying to vote him into the all-star game. We'll get to that next here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is the Sports Hub Celtic show.
This is Jaylen Brown, the home of the Boston Celtics basketball. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I don't think Taco, as much as I love him and as much as I enjoy having him around, should be the starting center for the East.
The All-Star game, ideally, would be formed on who plays like an All-Star, not who the fans want to be on the All-Star team. Like, they shouldn't be voting for, a 42-year-old veteran player that, like, Vince Carter just because he's popular. They should be voting for the players that are deserving of the honor, and that would be ideal.
All right, it's time we have a conversation about this. That was both Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge on their respective appearances here on 98.5 of Sports Hub, saying they don't want Taco Fall getting votes for the All-Star game. For those not paying attention, it's Jim Murray, it's Chris Casper, Sports Hub Celtics show here this week. For those not paying attention, the second fan vote of the 2020 NBA All-Star game released this week, and five Celtics remain in the mix: Kemba Walker, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, all great, and Taco Fall. All right. I know that there's the interest level on Taco Fall. I'm for that. I get why he gets the pop. It's an interesting story. It's a great story. I would love to see Taco Fall become like a legitimate NBA big man. But let's be honest with each other. You guys do what you want. You guys are the fans that you want to vote. Do it. That's completely your right. You want to vote. I wouldn't because deep down I think what's happened here is, you look at Taco Fall as, let's be honest, a bit of a freak. It's like when you used to go to the Topsfield Fair back in the day, Chris. I don't know, you know, you were a North Shore kid growing up there. We live in more accepting times, thankfully, in certain ways. Like, you don't have freak shows at the Topsfield Fair anymore. Back in the day, in the 80s, you'd go there and be like, come see Lobster Boy. And it was some sort, you know, poor thalidomide baby that ended up having, like, a defect. And they put him in a cage, and it's like, look at Lobster Boy. It's like, his hands are like a lobster claw. It's like, no, he had a birth defect. Like, let's look at the freak. a lot of your vote, a lot of what you're pumped up about with Taco Fall, like, it's weird, and it's and frankly, it makes me uncomfortable. Not a lot, like, offends me, Chris. Weak handshakes, people that prefer fluff over jelly with a peanut butter sandwich. And this Taco Fall thing, it kind of offends me, because I think it's gone to a weird place. I think a lot of people look at Taco Fall, and it's in a good way. Like, oh, it's a great story. That's great. Yeah, but I think that's minuscule. I think it's now, like, I want to see the weird big freak, like George Murison. Like, George Murison became a name. You know who George Murison was? Because he was looked at as kind of a freak. That's what this is. And it's weird. And it just, I don't know. Like, am I wrong in feeling that way?
No, I don't think you're wrong at all. I don't think you're wrong. And the good thing is that Taco Fall, I think, is a great guy with a great sense of, not only sort of self-deprecation, but self-esteem. He's very comfortable in his own skin. And you see that. And I think if this were somebody else, this attention would be handled differently and could be a real negative. But you're absolutely right with this. It is kind of like, you know, it's like he's, I don't want to use the word freak, but he's like a sideshow.
Yes.
You know, it's like, oh, I want to see the sideshow. Like, let's see the sideshow. And
yeah.
I think it's not only disrespectful to him, but I think it's disrespectful to the players who actually deserve All-Star votes.
Well, there's that from a basketball standpoint too. Like, that is the most obvious thing. So, like, especially what Danny Ainge was saying, like, you know, there's guys more deserving of it, but it's a lot of you people are treating this like, yeah, he's like our version of Manute Bol. You're gonna see our Manute Bol. It's Manute Bol for a new generation. Like, you're gonna see him. You don't have a guy like this. Like, come see our guys. He's entertainment. You've never seen anyone like our Taco Fall. You gotta see him. The world, is he that good of a basketball player? No, but you gotta see him. Like, it's kind of embarrassing.
I think it is embarrassing.
So,
I agree.
Again, do what you want. Vote for Taco Fall if you want. But I kind of think it's gross. Frankly.
I mean, I don't mind. Like, I think it's cool when the fans chant for him and cheer for him when he gets in the game. And we've seen people like that, like Scal, when Scal used to get into the game.
Sure.
They'd cheer for Scal and chant for Scal to come in. Like, so there are guys on the end of the bench that become sort of lovable figures for fans. That's happened for years. I have no problem with that. This All-Star voting thing, though, is a little different. Like, this is a bit much. Now, thankfully, it's not just 100% the fan vote. It's split between the fans, the players, and the media. But it is just, it's a little weird.
You're making a mockery of it is really what it comes down to. And you can't give fans too much is really what, it, you know, I think that's part of it, too. I think the league is probably looking at this and saying, like, oh, we've made a tragic mistake.
Well,
here.
I don't know. There's sort of this debate, though, you know, just quickly with the All-Star game. Is it about getting the best players or is it about putting on the best show for the fans? You know, that's the thing.
And I know by saying this, I will be accused by some for saying, oh, well, you're just like Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge and that you're anti-fun. No. I'm all for the fun. This thing, though, deep down, you know, it's just kind of weird. It's weird and kind of, it's just, yeah, there's something that just rubs me the wrong way about it. There is that, I think it's like there's a sideshow aspect to it more than anything else. Like, you got to see this guy. You've never seen anyone like him. Like, if he plays himself into an All-Star level.
Oh, definitely.
Great. He's deserving of the votes. But right now, again, it does feel to me like, oh, come see Lobster Boy. You've never seen anyone like him. Taco Fall, he's 7 feet tall. Whoa, you've never seen anyone like Taco Fall. Come see Taco Fall. Like, there's that whole circus sideshow act to it that I just, I don't know, I kind of find repulsive. But again, do what you want. Do what you want, though. But I will think less of you if you're making those votes.
Yeah, I can
tell. All right, that will wrap up the Sports Hub Celtics over this week. Again, it is the Celtics and the, you know what? I'll pause on that because I have to tell you when the Celtics are playing here in the Sports Hub headlines. Who's going to give you the Sports Hub headlines? That would be me.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.